T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome to Overnight America. We get the 4-hour show tonight, all the way live until midnight, then the replay hours, which you may be actually listening to right now from midnight to 2. The nice thing is you can always go back and catch the radio.com rewind or the podcast, however you prefer. And I got to mention, we've been having some pretty good discussions on the Facebook page as of late. Ryan Recker Radio on Facebook. Have you been there lately? Just last week. Was it last week? Was it 2 weeks ago? You lose track of time. The Jim White special debuted. I really enjoyed putting it together and learning more about Jim White. I'm sure many of you listened to him throughout the years and probably enjoyed taking that trip down good old KMOX memory lane. Yeesh. Well, I'm trying to decide who will be the subject for the next documentary. And I narrowed it down to two people, Ann Keefe or Bob Hardy. And I put the poll online on my Facebook page, and you can go vote right now. Which one do you prefer to hear first? And that's part of the deal. I'm going to do a special on both of them eventually. It's just who gets to go next. That's what I need help with. So last time around, I put the vote up. Jim White beat John McCormick when it came to the voting this time around. As of right now, a lot of people are voting Ann Keefe. She is the clear favorite for the next radio special here. So if you have a preference of which one you'd like to hear first, make sure you go to the Ryan Recker Radio Facebook page and go put a vote in there so I know which one you want to hear. Big show planned for you tonight. Brian Riggs is going to join us in about less than 10 minutes from now. Author of a new book called Flamethrower, but some of the other books he's wrote have made a lot of attention, made national stories based on his look back at World War II. He's a military historian, and he's asking a question: should we erase any evidence of America's slave-owning past? This will be interesting. A military historian, someone that documents and preserves history, and someone that knows an awful lot of history. Should we erase the evidence? That's an interesting way to look at it. So we're going to talk history with him, really, for almost the entire hour. So after the break, we're going to get up with him. Then a little bit after the next hour, Cynthia Fisher is the founder and chairman of PRA. It's Patient Rights Advocate, patientrightsadvocate.org. And talking a little bit about the coronavirus, I don't know if you caught this on the Today Show. It was a couple of weeks ago. But they did a story about a few people that went to go get a test for the coronavirus. So they go in under the recommendation of their doctor. And what happens? They get in and they say, oh, well, let's test this, and this. So you're told, oh, the test is going to be free, right? You're told because of the fight of the coronavirus, oh, they're waiving the fees, insurance going to pay for it. If not, the government will pick it up. We just want to make sure we catch anyone, document anyone that may be suffering from this COVID and may not know it. And we just don't want the spread of it to go around. So we'll take care of it. Don't you worry. Well, people would go into the testing area and then they would find out that they would get tested for, you know, two or three other things, and they get a bill for those other things. And they said, wait a minute, I thought you were testing for COVID. They said, no, we tested for COVID, but we also did this. Here's a bill. And sometimes they have to fight their insurance company to pick it up. So we're going to talk to her about that and that nonsense that shouldn't be happening. I want to talk a little bit about the KMOV piece. You saw this. I don't know if you caught this, but they have it up on their website now. So a couple of Saturdays ago, there were some Catholics praying the rosary near the St. Louis statue, the Louis the Ninth statue that's in front of the art museum. So was it Black Lives Matter? Some of these other groups showed up. They started hassling, yelling down, screaming, and even some people punching these people over there praying. So KMOV interviews someone that was caught on tape doing this, and he says, "Oh, I don't regret what I did. I'd do it again." And he's out there doing news interviews, and he still hasn't been charged. He's caught on camera and admits to doing it. You can even see on camera, these people did not provoke it whatsoever. It wasn't self-defense. He's out there brazen enough to say, "Oh, I'd do it again," and they still haven't charged him. You got to be kidding me. So I want to talk about that later in the show. Jack Kerfoot's going to join us, energy executive and author of Fueling America, An Insider's Journey. He wants to talk about the pandemic and what has changed during this pandemic and the way Americans consume energy. Is this going to push us closer to clean energy or further away? This is what I would argue. I would argue we may be pushing further away from clear energy at this point. So clean energy, I should say. So we'll talk to him about that. And the reason I think so is because so many people working from home, staying at home, there's less people consuming it. The cost of all of these other, like, let's think about this. The cost of an electric car assumes that you're driving the electric car long distances and you're saving. You know, you're filling up and you're not filling up your car. So thus you're charging your batteries. And because the cost of this is cheaper than the other, you might be saving money in the long run. If you don't drive that electric car, you're not saving any money. In fact, it's costing you a lot more money considering that you might have a gas car there that's not being used. So maybe clean energy is going to take a big hit because of COVID. He doesn't think so, but I want to talk to him about that in the show. Brad Young from Harris, Dowell, Fisher & Young is going to join us on the latest Supreme Court decision regarding insurance when it comes to religious institutions and how they can how can they affect the people that work for them. Robert Hardaway is the author of Saving the Electoral College, and there's a lot of people that look at the Supreme Court hearing or the decision from yesterday and the whole Supreme Court idea yesterday when it came to undermining the Electoral College, when it came to these faithless electors. He wants to talk about the value of the Electoral College and just how important it is and really the Supreme Court decision from yesterday. So we got so much to get to on the show tonight. I just want you to sit back and relax. I mean, I booked a full show of guests. You don't have to do anything. Yeah, just like any other night. Just sit back. Don't do anything. Put your feet up if you can. And enjoy. We're online, Ryan Recker Radio on Facebook. Brian Rigg, as I mentioned, our military historian, is going to join us next on Overnight America KMOX. And Overnight America continues tonight with some great, great guests. I love topics on history, looking back, particularly about American history. World War II is a big part of it. And joining us now is an author who was a former Marine, written a new book called Flamethrower, and many other very well-acclaimed books. He is a military historian, Dr. Brian Rigg. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Hey, thank you, Mike, for having me.
Very good. Well, I have a few things here, looking at some of the other books that you wrote about, some really fascinating ones. Lives of Hitler's Jewish Soldiers. You had one about, what was the other one? The Rabbi Saved by Hitler Soldiers. You have some very interesting stories, and do you primarily focus on World War II?
Yes, yeah. I've since the 90s, I've focused on World War II, and I was specialized in World War II history in the European theater and the Holocaust. And in the last 5 years, I've kind of jumped over to the other theater and focused on the Pacific War.
I see. And that's where Flamethrower comes in. And that's it's neat. And you have a doctorate. What did you study?
Well, it was a general military history with a focus on the Wehrmacht, the German military of World War II. So it was military history in general and then with a specific focus on the German military during the Third Reich. And so that's where, I got my Ph.D. I got my Ph.D. at Cambridge, and that's where I was focusing on to, further my discipline of military history.
Yeah, this is going to sound like a weird question, and you can take it any way you want, but as Americans, we do focus an awful lot on World War II. It's almost like any time someone wants to talk about history, their first inclination is to talk about World War II. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, we had 16.3 million men and women that went to the service at that time. So, you know, this generation was the most heavily militarized generation that America's ever seen. We had, you know, a couple of hundred, let's see, what was the population at the time? American population at the time was a little over 100 million. So okay. You have, you know, 15%, you know, 14% of the population that goes through this campaign. And it stamped the whole world's reality afterwards with the Marshall Plan, setting up democracies in Japan and Germany, which that generation continued to build out and support. And then we were the powerhouse in the 50s and 60s economically. So these people who helped set up this new world dominion, if you will, were the ones that, you know, had been raised as soldiers and Marines and sailors during this time. And it was such a popular war. The movies got into it. People talked about it all the time. They had veterans meetings and so on. It was so much part of our culture that it just basically really stamped the memory of the nation like no other event in our history, really, except for probably the Civil War.
I think that of all the different pieces of history, World War II is an interesting time. You're right about the movies, and same thing with the documentaries. There's been a lot of focus on World War II and the history there, and the worldwide conflict that was involved with it. You see all the different implications to it. And you focused on some other parts of it as opposed to American history. Some of your other books happen to look at, you know, Hitler's Jewish soldiers, and that even had some acclaims to that. You won awards for that feature. Even on Dateline, it made an appearance, which is really fascinating. So part of that is looking at the history from that side of it. What got you interested in looking at military history, at least from the Nazi side?
Well, you know, the way I got into this was really random. My family, one branch, comes from Germany and comes from Eastern Germany. So when the wall came down in 1989, I started thinking as a young kid, I'd love to go back to the homeland where my family came from. I was raised by my mom and grandmother, and that's the German wing of my family through my maternal grandmother. And I wanted to learn about where they came from, who they were, and so on. So in 1992, I went over to Germany, and I was living in Berlin and learning the language, and then I started researching my family's background. And when I was over there, I saw a film called Europa, Europa, and it's about a Jew who served in the Nazi military during World War II, and it's a remarkable film. And when I was in the theater waiting for the film to begin, this old man came in, and he was trying to find a seat. His eyes hadn't adjusted to the darkness, and he was a little discombobulated. So with my good Texas upbringing, I went up to him, helped him find a seat. We started talking, and all through the film, since we were the only ones really in the theater, he gave me commentary on the battle scenes and so on, because he was a German veteran himself. Well, it turned out that he was of Jewish descent as well. So I watched this film about a Jew who served in the Nazi military, only to sit next to a guy of Jewish descent who also served in the German military. And then a month later, when I was doing research in my own family's background, I found that I had Jewish ancestry as well. And I'm thinking to myself, this is kind of strange. So, you know, a very serendipitous summer. And so I came back to Yale my sophomore year to start doing my studies. And I talked to a lot of my professors about looking into this. And a couple of them encouraged me, and I started exploring this. And before I knew it, I found that there were thousands and thousands of people of Jewish descent who served in the Nazi military during World War II, many of them getting Aryanized by Hitler. I mean, generals and admirals and tank commanders were being Aryanized. I mean, the second in command of the Luftwaffe, Erhard Milch, he was a field marshal, a five-star general, was Aryanized by Hitler. Hitler, in his weird view of genetics, believed that if somebody had blonde hair and blue eyes and a good military track record, that he was being, quote-unquote, dominated by his German blood. And As a result, he reserved the right to declare that person of German blood and bring him back into the citizenship of Germany. And so as I was going into this, Mike, I realized, and my professors verified this, that nobody had looked at this part of the population of Germany that were products of assimilation, and that this population was much bigger than the Jewish population, the quote-unquote half-Jews and quarter-Jews. And what's even crazier is that they were drafted in the military. They had to serve. And by the end of the study, you know, it was over a 10-year study, Mike, that I did. I came to the conclusion after looking at assimilation records, birth rates, mixed marriage rates, and draft notices, because they identified people according to their race, that there was probably around 160,000 men of Jewish descent who served in the Nazi military. And many of them, if they did well, like I was just mentioning, Hitler reserved the right to give them special exemptions. So when I dove into that as an undergrad at Yale University, I didn't think it was going to give birth to my master's and then later on my PhD at Cambridge. But it took on a life of its own, because the reason why you get a PhD is because you find new research that nobody has done. And I fell into it as an undergrad, and I realized this was a huge chapter of World War II that nobody had really looked at before in depth. And it answers some really troubling questions that we've struggled as academics with the Third Reich, namely, who knew about the Holocaust? And did everybody know about it at the time? And what I found is that a lot of people knew about persecution, obviously, and they knew it wasn't good to be of Jewish descent, but that their neighbors and their government and their military was actually systematically exterminating their relatives while they were serving in the military was something that was beyond these guys' knowledge. And that's one of the most shocking conclusions I found. So it tells us a lot about that question, and then it tells us an awful lot about race relationships in Nazi Germany, how bankrupt the Nazi ideology was, and how complicated the society was in the German military in implementing Nazi ideology. So that's how I fell into this subject matter, and why my first couple of books have been focused on Nazi Germany and the German military and the Holocaust.
Wow. That's a big answer. And I got to say, too, normally you don't find too many people that have a deep appreciation of history. It's not something that's widely appreciated like it should be. Maybe it's a generational thing, because if I go and I look at my parents, grandparents' generation, well, especially my grandparents' generation, when we're talking about World War II veterans, they were living it. And I've spoke to a lot of World War II veterans that in their later years decided to go and read up on the things they were a part of, because they didn't even know everything that was going on during the time, even though they were there and they witnessed all of these things, which is pretty remarkable. Do you mind holding on after the break? I have a couple of more questions, and I really am looking forward to spending this time, this hour, to talk some history.
Oh, absolutely, Mike. Thanks so much. I'll hold on and await your return.
Dr. Brian Rigg joins us, author of a new book called Flamethrower. We'll have to talk about that, but we were looking at some of his other books that led up to this point, and I really wanted to talk to him about the big movement, the big push that we're seeing in a lot of cities, the push that is, hey, we kind of know history, but not really, and we just know we don't like this, so let's tear everything down. I wanted to ask him a little bit about what we're seeing in today's modern society, the way we approach history, the way that we try to hide and prop up or don't prop up. There's so many other ways this could go. And I thought it would be really interesting to talk to a military historian about that, which we're going to spend some time after the weather coming up next on Overnight America KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and joining us here is a military historian. I love talking history. I love learning things about history. He's the author of Flamethrower. It's a new book out now, which you can go and find. Also, many other historical books under his name, Dr. Brian Rigg. Thank you so much for sticking around.
Hey, well, thanks for having me. Ryan's right. I called you Mike. I had your producer's name in my head when we started talking. So
I know. I was
laughing. Thanks so much for having me.
I tried to keep a tally. I counted four. I don't know if you got up to five, but I was seeing where that was going. but it's all right. Just rolling with it. There was a moment I thought, maybe I just pretend to be producer Mike for the rest of the show and see how that plays out. Today
well,
in America.
Thanks for being so gracious, Ryan.
Today in America, we see a lot of people that have a very narrow look at history. And we see a lot of discussion about history, primarily going back to the Civil War, talks about slavery. We see a lot of people look at history in a way that, I guess, shapes certain mindsets that they already have, as opposed to maybe appreciating or learning about the history to begin with. I think a lot of people get these false ideas about certain things in history, and then they go out and they act on those things. It's interesting, too, to see people vandalizing and tearing down statues, and regardless of who it is, you see if a protester sees a statue, they want to tear it down. Sometimes they have no idea, really, the person or the act of the people behind those. And I'm curious, as a historian and someone that pays attention to it, in a time like this in America where people are just very quick to condemn and tear down history, what kind of value can we take from America's past, and what should we be doing with the information in the history of America?
Well, you know, you obviously are hitting upon topics that are very hotly discussed right now, and I stuck my historical tongue in the hornet's nest a few days ago and had a little article in the USA Today, and then I've been posting a little bit about it on the internet about this. Now, just I want to do a disclosure to begin with. I come from three great-great-grandfathers who fought for the Union, and they were at Vicksburg and at Gettysburg. And, you know, I'm a Marine officer. I took an oath to the Constitution and defend this nation. And if anybody threatens this nation or the Constitution, you know, we should take them out. We should kill them. And so when you look at the Civil War and what was going on, we have to, you know, state what these people were. They were traitors, you know, and it's, I think it's unfortunate to some degree that we did not have like a Nuremberg trial-like session with the Confederate leaders, Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee and so on, because they tried to tear apart our country, and it resulted in 700,000 men losing their lives. Now, saying that, it was a war between two different cultures with their view of what they wanted society to be. Most of the soldiers who were fighting on both sides were not fighting for slavery or to end slavery. They were fighting for their states and their homeland. Now, granted, slavery was a huge component of the Southern economy, And although 90% of the Confederate soldiers didn't own slaves, they benefited from the slave culture that created a very rich economy that the South had. Now, getting back to the question that you have about memory, monuments, the flag, Confederate flag, and so on. You know, we have to be sensitive about the Confederate flag. I mean, the flag that is out there, the battle flag, represented a lot of things that is not what it represents today. I mean, when the KKK took it up and white supremacists and whatnot, they gave it a whole nother feeling, like Shelby Foote, the historian, has said, that was not what that flag represented when it was used at the time. Here again, when most people were fighting for their homeland at the time, what they viewed, it was for what they would view as Southern values, and many of those values were not about slavery, although here again, they had a slave culture, but most people did not own slaves. So, when you look at history, it's very complicated. It's not black and white. I think these monuments to these traitors, it was kind of, to some degree, naming these bases after Confederate generals and having these monuments up was part of the healing process for the South, kind of like an olive branch from the federal government of saying, okay, South, you're part of the nation. We're going to do this to some degree to, you know, honor some of your Southern gentlemen and what they represented that was good and help you feel more part of the American culture. Now, me as a fierce patriot, a firm believer in our Constitution, and looking at these guys and what they almost did to our country, I'm kind of horrified that we have these monuments to these traitors up all over the country. Now, I don't think we need to destroy them, and we see that the sophistication of a lot of these, you know, rioters and, you know, in many respects, hooligans that are tearing down statues. I mean, they're tearing down statues of Frederick Douglass. They don't even know what they're tearing down. You know, they're defacing, you know, statues of Cervantes that wrote Don Quixote. I think if we do remove them from public lands, we need to put them in museums, put them in the proper historical context, tell people who they were, why these statues came into being, and do it through a very orderly fashion through the courts and do it according to the rule of law. That's what we are as Americans. And so I think that's very important to look at. But, you know, it's in my essay that I put out there for USA Today, and they only published half of it, you know, I say we got to also look at where was the justification for this, and to what end do we take this anti-historical approach of trying to eradicate this history because we're using today's morals and ethics to judge people from the past. I mean, if we're tearing down statues of these guys because they were supportive of slavery, you know, do we tear down statues of George Washington? Do we tear down statues of Thomas Jefferson? Do we tear down statues of Abraham or Moses? You know, people forget that in the Bible, which was used by Confederates to justify slavery, and in Leviticus and in Ephesians, it actually sanctioned slavery. God did not come out and prohibit it. He actually supported it. And so, you know, do you go to Abraham, who was just like Thomas Jefferson, had slaves, slept with his slaves? Do we take his face off of buildings? Do we demonize him as the father of monotheism and the father of Judaism and Christianity in many respects? I mean, you go down this rabbit hole, and it becomes very complicated because slavery was a part of mankind's society until very recently. You know, some of the biggest slave owners and slave creators was the Ottoman Empire after the Civil War, and some of the main people who were sold and bought in slavery were whites. People don't realize this. And then, of course, we had the indentured servant slavery system, and they could earn their freedom much more easily than a African-American, you know, back during the Civil War time. So, I mean, you got a lot of really problematic, tough questions you got to look at. But, you know, getting to the problems with the bases and the monuments, I think it's a very simple process. I mean, I'm biased. I'm a Marine Corps officer. Take the Medal of Honor recipients from World War II, use their names and name the Southern bases now after these brave patriots and heroes of World War II. and don't name them after traitors who, although some of them very good military commanders, they ultimately were trying to tear apart the Union that those bases now have sworn allegiance to support. And so I think that would be a very easy remedy, you know, to rename the bases. And then the monuments, just take them and put them in museums. And then we don't have the discussion anymore. But to tear down statues of, you know, Teddy Roosevelt and Abraham Lincoln and Thomas Jefferson, I think it's taking it to too much of an extreme. And if we were to judge everybody with our today's ethics, I think we'd be tearing down almost all monuments. And so we got to be very careful of what the main mission is in doing what we're doing right now. And so that's a long-winded answer to your question, but thank you for giving me the floor to explore.
Yeah, that was a lot. There's a couple of things I would probably want to point out. One thing that you did mention, at least about the Bible and the way slavery was looked at that. So I guess I will put this up there in a little preface as a Christian. Slavery was looked at much differently, biblically speaking, thousands of years ago than what we looked at in the United States. It was a whole different type of deal. It was mostly to pay off debts, but then again, there was even the Jubilee year, which freed all the slaves after a certain point. And the nice thing, at least, that was abandoned when you go back and look at, you know, thousands of years ago. That whole idea of justifying that was abandoned. So much earlier than the United States, I should probably point out. But I wanted to point out something else, too, about trying to find things in a relative term. And maybe we'll have to do this after the break, but because we have one more segment. I wanted to just in general talk about how we judge people relative to fill in the blank. So we can say relative to the times of today, relative to things that we look at today as bad, but back then they didn't look at it as so bad. I don't know if anyone could be held up over the test of time. There's very few people. So depending on relative to the person of what they find offensive about the certain person, we can all agree slavery was bad. At least today we can all agree slavery was bad. But I think if you go and you probably find anyone, I'm sure you can find faults in them and then use that as the same justification to erase them from anything that has a naming right. So
we don't love our heroes because they're perfect, but what they do despite their imperfections, Abraham Lincoln, JFK, and others. And I think you're very right, Ryan, to point out that if anybody's put underneath a microscope, they're a combination of good and bad. Now, hopefully the good outweighs the bad, and especially those that we honor, but everybody has their problems. And to think that we need to have people who don't have problems to honor is a very naive view of history and mankind.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you a little bit more about that after the break, if you don't mind. And I got to say, if people wanted to check out your book, Flamethrower, where can they find it right now?
It's on Amazon and Kindle audiobook as well as hardback, or they can go to my website, which is Brian Mark Rigg, my name, Brian with a Y like in Yankee, Rigg is with two G's, and then Mark is the traditional way of spelling Mark with a K, and they can find my books through my website or on Amazon.com.
Brian Mark Rigg, you can look up his new book, Flamethrower, which you can find online, too. We're going to continue our conversation. He's a military historian coming up next on Overnight America KMOX.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
Joining us for one last segment is Dr. Brian Rigg, author of Flamethrower, which you can look up online. Among his other books, you can actually look him up online too, brianmarkrigg.com on his website. Thank you again for spending so much time with us tonight.
Well, hey, thank you for having me, Ryan.
So one last question for you. We only have about 4 or 5 minutes here. So We find in today's culture, very much so, a cancel culture. So if you said something 3 years ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago, individuals could find themselves in a lot of hot water. And sometimes it's for things that are debatable, jokes or segments that they did on a TV show or, you know, things that at times may have changed and comedy changes, things like that. A lot of times it has to be revolving around comedy. Sometimes it doesn't. But the problem that we find is that a lot of times the outrage is relative to the person that's upset, and we are so quick to, I guess, coddle the person that's upset as opposed to debating the merits of the subject. Or in this case, if we go back and look at history, debating the merits of the person. A lot of times people will show up with force and they decide it's easier to just allow the force to happen than to fight the mob that shows up and wants to rip down a statue of fill in the blank. So a lot of times it's relative to the person's issues or grievances or whatever it may be, and it's not relative to history, and it's never a conversation. So how do you, as a historian, go back and look at the merits of what should be and what shouldn't be allowed to be kept, I guess, when it comes to statues, when it comes to the things that we learn about? That sometimes it's even trying to erase the things we learn about in the history books. So there's a lot of things that get canceled. What are those things? What should we be doing in this era, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it is a very tough question that you posed to me as a historian. And, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, I think, man, it's going to be tough to answer it in that time. Mm-hmm. You know, when we look at history, I mean, there's so many things around us that if you looked how they got made, or if you look at the person who's being honored, you would be less than happy with what you would find out. I mean, people love going to the Colosseum. But this was built with slave labor from the Roman Empire, and it was used to slaughter people, many times innocent. Sometimes, you know, Christians were put in there, and they were just killed because of thought crime, how they believed about God. These were places of crime, of mass murder, and they were built on the backs of enslaved people. Should it be torn down? Well, you know, Italy would be very upset about that, and that would kill their tourism now. But, you know, this is a building that has a very bad past. So I think if you go down the rabbit hole of tearing down things that are from history, I don't think that's a wise thing to do. Now, I think it needs to be properly documented and shown. I mean, that's why we don't have statues of Hitler up all throughout Germany, which they could, but they took them down after the war. Many times they had been bombed to the ground already. And those have been brought into museums and given the proper historical context. But there's a lot of Nazi buildings that are still around and artifacts and so on. And, you know, the swastika a lot of times has been removed, like the Great Olympics of 1936. You know, that Colosseum is still there, the bells are still there, the Nazi statues are still there, but they're given proper historical context. And I think that's just what we need to do going forward with any person or artifact. You know, the problem is with the statues and the Confederate statues are, you know, these guys were American traitors, you know, so what are you honoring? And I think that's something that's interesting that each culture needs to look at is how do we make our heroes? And this is one of the problems that I, you know, uncovered with Flamethrower is that I talked an awful lot about Medal of Honor recipients from World War II and how they were made. And I found that one of the biggest living legends today in the Marine Corps, he's 96 years old, ships are being named after him. Hospitals are named after him. President Trump has him at rallies. The senator from West Virginia has him at his talks a lot of times. And I found that Woody Williams is his name. He should not have gotten the medal. Self-reporting got him the medal. And he's a hero that was made through this process that probably should not have been made. So not, you know, the larger context of the Confederate monuments I can talk about, but I've also had a personal experience with how do we make our heroes? How do we document our heroes? And that's, I think, something that the society is struggling with.
Yeah, this is going to be a conversation for another time. I'd love to have you back on the show if you don't mind.
You bet, Ryan, anytime.
Yeah. So, again, if people wanted to look you up online, it's just brianmarkrigg.com, B-Y-R-A-N, Mark Rigg, R-I-G-G.com. That's the best spot.
Yeah, and Amazon. There's a lot of information on Amazon about all three types of mediums that my book is out on.
Perfect. And Flamethrower out now. Military historian Dr. Brian Rigg. Really enjoyed the time. Thank you so much for coming on to Overnight America. He joins us on the TDK Technologies guest line on KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.